I'm recording.
Okay.
So
you said you were good.
Well, I was asking you guys because it doesn't.
Oh my god.
Anyway, on Monday.
Oh, that's not a chugging beer.
He just walked away.
15 minutes of getting crap set up. That's not a chugging beer, and he leaves.
Oh, I can't wait to hear that in the recording because Discord didn't send it through.
That's great.
To be fair, when you turn 28, really not a single beer on the planet is a chugging beer, I've come to realize. But
28?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Aren't we 29 now?
I'm 29.
April 14th, I'm 29.
Oh.
Well, when you hit your late 20s, you realize that actually there isn't a single beer that's a chugging beer, but Trogues Independent Brewing, the Mad Elf Holiday Ale brewed with
cherries
like
and honey. That's like one of the worst possible picks.
Absolutely not.
Listening back to one of our previous recordings, I'd call that a chunky beer.
A real chunky, chunky, bready.
Okay.
Okay. Nice. Discord couldn't even filter that one out. That was good.
I made it through.
Okay.
But yeah,
so on Monday, yes. On Monday, Zach yeah. and I watched 1984 David Lynch's Dune.
The movie in the theaters.
It came back to theaters for 2 days.
Yeah.
We saw it in the theaters. That was the first time I have seen that movie.
Oh, that's
ever.
The way to see it.
It was so weird. Like, I could not have prepared myself if I tried any harder than I already did. Like, there's no preparation I could have done to be ready for the experience that I had in that theater. It was so strange.
Yeah.
That's all I've been thinking about because the three of us haven't talked for actually a while now.
Yeah,
and we definitely haven't talked since we watched that movie. And I've been dying to talk about that movie.
Hey, I am always down to talk about Dune, Hans.
I know, but we're here right now to talk about
Contract to Kill. The only reason I know that is because I have my notes open in front of me.
Yeah, and I don't want to talk about Contract to Kill. I just want to talk about 1984 Dune.
Yeah, wait, here we go. How about you get to talk about David Lynch's 1984 Dune if we can complete talking about Keone Waxman's 2016 Contract to Kill.
Hear me out.
Oh?
Maybe we don't actually talk about Dune quite yet. What I was going to say is I think tonight, though, we should talk about Keone Waxman's 2016 film Contract. 2016? How many of these came out in 2016?
Way too many. A lot.
Wait, this is the second Keone Waxman to come out in 2016.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that just hit me like a ton of bricks. Yeah. That makes a lot of things make a lot more sense.
Yeah. Like how it feels like three different scripts got thrown into a blender.
But we should talk about that, and then I think we should actually officially, for realsies, like, we cannot leave the call until we decide on what season two of the podcast is.
Oh,
and
yeah, that's
decide
good.
On what the rollout for Chronicles of Narnia will be like, because
I
have a proposal for exactly how Chronicles of Narnia should work,
okay.
But I think there is a very good chance it will involve Dune 1984 directed by David Lynch.
Okay.
Okay.
But not as our first Chronicle. I think there is another movie that has to be the first Chronicles of Narnia.
Yeah.
Do you know what that is?
We shouldn't spoil it.
But we can just bleep it.
Well, I think it has to be. I think it has to be the.
It has to be the.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, like that's just not for debate.
Yeah. That was an early foregone conclusion.
Yeah, that was already decided. But I think should talk about get Contract to Kill out of the way and then stop recording. And then if we want, start a second recording for like planning. So I don't even know if we'll release it, but for like planning season two.
Yes.
And planning Chronicles and Narnia. And
we can put it up on
decisions.
The Patreon. They can get an early preview of season two.
Okay, but that nothing you just said has anything to do with Dune, and I'm dying to talk about Dune.
I am always dying to talk about Dune, Hans. What you are experiencing now is my like default state of being.
Hans, you are officially a Dune dude.
I know. I haven't told Aaron
about that yet, have I?
We have to talk about Contract to Kill. We have to talk about Contract to Kill.
I gotta go get it. Hold on.
We have to talk about Contract to Kill.
But I just want to talk about Dune. No, I don't know if you read it yet. I touched on this in my review, in my Letterboxd review.
I read your
Dune.
Review.
What?
I read your review.
Oh, okay. Well, it's just at the end, it is like, yes. I made us shirts.
Zach presented me with this before we went into the theater. It is
great.
Amazing.
That is awesome.
We'll absolutely be wearing that for the premiere of Dune Part 2.
Yes.
Hans, I know you're currently reading A Song of Ice and Fire for your mom, but I think...
Gotta fit some Dune in there.
I think you have to fit Dune in there, because it was so fun sitting in that theater watching 1984's Dune as a person who's read 5 of the Dune books and a person who's read 0 of the Dune books.
So I kept leaning over to Zach and say, okay, you know what? We can't.
We have to talk about Contract to Kill first.
We have to eat the broccoli before we're able to eat the steak.
This is not broccoli.
This is like you have to eat your napkin before you can actually eat your meal.
Popeye's brand canned spinach.
Well, much like the napkin, it was quite bland and hard to chew through. So yes, we must eat our napkin before we can eat our meal. Before we can eat the Popeye's biscuit that is Dune, directed by David Lynch from 1984.
This should be good, but I'm just not.
Like, this should be good, but my mouth is so dry. I need some honey or something.
All right, let's get into it.
But you can't check your six. It's kind of like, taking a screwdriver to a gunfight.
What's happening? Just like old Tom, Tom.
I'm gonna run through this really quickly. I'm gonna start us off with a thought that I had. Just the one thought. This movie felt a lot like Steven Seagal wanted to do Ghost Protocol.
Oh.
It, not throughout the whole thing.
Okay,
there are elements in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
That really made it seem like that. And I, the whole time, it just made me angry.
Yeah. Wait, no. This is Steven Seagal's Ghost Protocol. And that, a lot of times when you say, like, this is this person's blank, if that blank is good, the assumption is the thing you're talking about is good too. This is Steven Seagal's very poor, very bad imitation of Ghost Protocol.
Right.
Yeah. Steven Seagal never got an Empire Strikes Back.
No.
At the very least, he is the main character of this movie, and while he does have a supporting cast, they are both on the poster. This is a really strange...
What?
There's a couple different posters. The Letterboxd poster just has Steven Seagal, the Wikipedia
poster. Can we talk about the poster first, though? Before we talk about anything about the movie, the poster...
Yes, my favorite part of
this.
The audio medium of podcasts is discussing the visual medium of film posters.
The poster that I'm looking at right now that I need to talk about this poster. And there are only three things on this poster. One, the name of the movie. Two, a picture of Steven Seagal holding a gigantic sniper rifle that never shows up in the movie.
Oh, that one.
And three, a tagline that had my skin crawling before I hit play.
Yeah.
This is the tagline of the movie.
Oh, so you're seeing the IMDb one where he's in grayscale.
Yes. This is the tagline of the movie. And I just... perfectly encapsulates the movie. Like, this is a perfect tagline for this film, and it made my skin crawl. They didn't just cross the border, they crossed the line. What? I was terrified to hit play on this thing.
As you should.
And I was right.
As you should.
So, knowing that, having that in the back of your head, we'll link the poster.
All three of them.
Gosh.
All three of them. Knowing that in the back of your head, Steven Seagal is an asset for every three-letter agency on the planet. At the same time, they just roll through all of them.
They put that right into the script.
Yeah, it's absurd. I'm just going to roll through this really quickly. There's a drug cartel trying to find a new route to smuggle drugs into the U.S. through Puerto Rico, I think it was, by partnering with another gang from the Middle East for some reason. Seagal is reactivated and given the mission to stop that from happening. He has to get, like, a team together. It's the classic. This is where, like, the Ghost Protocol vibes start coming from. He has to, like, put his team together to stop that. One of them is a drone operator with the world's largest, loudest, most obvious drone than you can possibly imagine. Like, there's no way that anyone wouldn't spot this thing.
Well, but let's be clear. You may be thinking this is like a military operation. We're using three-letter agencies. No, this is like a person. Like, this is your friend who has like a drone with a GoPro.
Right.
This isn't like a military strike drone. This is like it just has the propellers that you kind of, you use it in the public park and the police come over and they're like, hey, you can't do that. Right. When he and said they needed a drone operator and then this guy pulled up with like a big, like a Walmart drone.
But it's like enormous and incredibly, it's like an old, it's a drone from 2016. Like, yeah. It's huge and incredibly with loud, just like and a incredibly DSLR obvious
camera like hanging off the bottom of it.
Yeah.
Exactly. Or a gun it's, hanging off the bottom of it.
In some for case, one it's scene. But anyway. Yeah.
And it didn't make any sense that it didn't have anything to do with the rest of the movie. The second part of his team is an old flame of Seagal's who is far too young to be an old flame of Seagal's. Like, they're supposed to have like history years and years back, but she would have been like a child because she's way too young for that. It didn't make any sense at all. But, you know, it's a Seagal movie, so of course. Then you have about 45 minutes of nothing. Like, nothing. Then it's just back and forth. They're like tracking the gangs and that's it. It's nothing. It's literally nothing. Then their safe house is raided by one of the gangs and his old flame, the girl, gets kidnapped. Seagal just lets that happen. He just lets that happen. The door is open to the safe house and the girl walks up and literally says out loud, I thought I closed that. And then a guy comes up from behind and like kidnaps her. And Seagal is in the background. You see him pick a sword up off the wall. A sword, of course, a sword.
A training sword. A blunt object.
Right. There are guns on the wall, too, but he picks up the sword and then steps back into the shadows. And then she gets kidnapped. And then they leave. And then he does something about it. Like, he lets her get kidnapped. It's the... We talk all the time about how these movies show something that's supposed to make him look more competent, and in reality it makes him look less competent, and it's like they're doing it on purpose.
This is
it's
like so, the okay. biggest shining example of that idea.
This is the movie so far where every single thing that happens is that they only even their successes are through in like intentional incompetence. Like, this happens every now and again in the other movies. This is every single plot point, every single story beat, every single character interaction is them being bad at their job, but sometimes making it work for them. It was driving me up a wall.
Now, I will say, it did make me think of Ghost Protocol.
But in Ghost Protocol, it's like things go genuinely wrong and they have to rise above the situation to overcome it. They are incompetent and then have to figure out how to deal with the mess that they made. Like,
yes, we're not done yet.
So up to this point, we've had introductions, 45 minutes of literally nothing. And then Seagal lets his partner get kidnapped. So they have to go get her back. Seagal pits the cartel and the gang against each other. Then he gets a call from his superiors in every single three-letter agency, and it turns out it's not actually about the drugs. What they actually wanted was this terrorist who's a part of the one gang who is responsible for blowing up an airliner.
They and never explain how that's relevant, but...
They never explain how that's relevant, but they show like a very, very, very bad CGI video of an airliner blowing up above people on a playground. He was being smuggled into the U.S., not drugs. So the CIA team... I say that like it's out of nowhere because it is out of nowhere. A CIA team shows up to kill everyone. So Seagal and his team have to kill everyone first because they have to finish what they started.
I have a whole thing about that.
I'm glad you do because I sure didn't get it. But it's actually just because the airline bomber was also CIA and he was ordered to blow up the plane, but then Seagal kills him anyway. And there's like this.
Is that what that was? Anyway.
That's what he said, but there's this hint that it could be they could have had something to say about the CIA meddling in internal affairs and causing a tragedy on purpose to point the finger at another country.
I actually have a line in here. Wait, is this saying that 9/11 was an inside job? Like,
like they almost had
they
something
come
to
really
say about
close
that.
To saying they, that and then don't.
They come really close and then they just don't. And I mean, kind of thankfully almost, but I don't know, it's a mess. And then Seagal just kills him anyway. CIA team wipes out the one gang, so Seagal and the drone guy have to track down the cartel to kill them to get his partner back. They do that. Takes way too long. Of course, the boss in the last fight has a gun in his hands on both of them, on both Seagal and his partner, and he just says, "You're dead," and then lets... There's like a solid 3 seconds of lead up, and he lets Seagal walk right up to him and take the gun out of his hands, and then Seagal shoots him. And that's it. The movie's over. Roll credits.
Can I explain what I think the plot is? I wrote a plot synopsis.
Please do, because as far as I saw, it was mission set up. Seagal has to build his team, then like 45 minutes of nothing. Yeah. Girl gets kidnapped, and they have to go get the girl back, so, and that's really all it is.
So here's what I think happens in this movie. Now, I want everyone to know that the dialogue in the movie actively fights against the plot. Like, characters will have a conversation about what is going on and actively contradict themselves and each other.
I have some notes
in the course of the dialogue, so that... You can't tell what's going on. You don't actually know what is happening.
Right.
Because from one line to the next, they'll say different things that are
right.
mutually exclusive. Here's my best attempt to figure out in a few sentences what is happening. There are Islamic terrorists trying to smuggle a bomb maker into the United States. And a couple of these terrorist guys were caught crossing the border. That's how the U.S. government got tipped off. Now, what they're trying to do is they're trying to build a relationship with the Mexican drug cartels because apparently they're good at getting stuff across the southern border into the United States. That's
okay.
That's where that's that relationship. They're going to get it through Puerto Rico or something. I don't know. There's this whole subplot about Puerto Rico. It doesn't really matter.
It completely does not matter.
It's all undermined halfway through
and
the
so
movie.
The, like, it's... Yeah, the CIA or the DEA or the FBI, it's unclear who hires Seagal.
Well, it's unclear it's even who Seagal has worked for in the past.
Yes.
And will work for now.
The United States government hires Seagal to get information. So the government
really
knows that
they're... It's really just a guy hires Seagal.
It's some guy.
It's a guy in a bar.
Comes to a bar, which literally the sign outside the bar says CD Bar. The name of the bar is CD
Bar.
It's
called CD. Oh, I missed that.
And there's next door to CD Bar is a massage parlor with the same massage sign from Absolution where Byron Mann walks out of.
Wait,
in
really?
Absolution. Yes. It's the exact same sign. They
like,
reused props.
They shared the set?
They reused props.
Dang, that's right up there with Japan Sword.
Japan Sword. I missed that question in the quiz.
So the CIA, the government is trying to take out three guys. The leader of the Mexican drug cartel, the leader of the terrorists, and this bomb maker. But they never know where all three of them are at the same time. And if they kill one of them, or even two of them, then whichever one they don't get will run away. So they know that these three guys are going to be in the same room at some point, and they'll be able to take them all out at the same time. But they don't know when or where. But they do know that two of them, the leader of the terrorists and the leader of the cartel, are going to have a meeting at this hotel in Istanbul, I think?
Yes.
Yeah.
They meet before that, but the real meeting isn't until later.
Yeah, so they meet in Istanbul to set up a meeting for some other place.
And Istanbul may look a lot like Romania to you. We're just going to roll with it. You may look at that and think that looks like Romania. Ignore that.
Yeah, so the government hires...
You may also
hires...
think that, you know, every other location looks like Romania. You just got to...
So the government hires Seagal and says, all we want you to do is spy on this meeting. They're going to talk about where the next meeting will be, where all three of them will be in the same room. All you have to do is listen in on that meeting and get the information of where the next meeting is, where they will all be together so we can send in a team and take them all out at the same time. Seagal says, bet, and then doesn't do that. Instead, he decides that he's going to put together this elaborate plan.
Me.
He's going to put together this elaborate scheme where he pits the two sides against each other by like buying a specific kind of car, and they're like have multiple car chases and cloning people's voices with like pseudo gadgets. Also, the gadgets in this movie are hilarious.
Very Ghost
That
Protocol.
Is unfortunately very Mission Impossible in a That's very frustrating way.
But it's wish.com Mission Impossible.
It is. We have exactly like 7 words from this guy, so now I can completely reconstruct an AI like recreation of his voice that I will talk into, and it will live transcribe it into his voice.
Yes. Now, by sowing mistrust between the two factions, the third guy, the bomb maker, who is supposed to be coming to the second meeting, the terrorists decide, hey, it's like too dangerous. Like, we can't really trust them yet. They're probably spying on us. You stay home, and just I and the cartel guy will meet. Which means that Seagal, choosing to go way off the program of what he was asked to do, completely destroys the entire point of this entire mission. The whole point of the mission was to figure out where these three guys will be at the same time. And he creates the only condition in which they will not be in the same place at the same time.
Well,
he is 100% at fault for that not being possible, and there was no reason for him to do that. He just decided that he was going to do that. No one asked him to pit the two sides against each other. No one asked him for this elaborate scheme. All they asked him to do was put his ear up against a wall in an adjoining hotel room.
Well, and then he gets mad at his handler for basically telling him to back down.
Well, yeah, because he hands over the information, which is actually bad at this point, but he apparently doesn't know that. And the CIA said, or the FBI or DEA or whoever says, okay, good job, mission accomplished, Seagal. We're going to send our SWAT team in there to, you know, send it in SEAL Team 6 to go take him out. He's like, but I want to do it. It's like, well, no, like you did what you're supposed to, but I want to do it. Please don't. And then he does. And actively gets multiple people killed that don't need to get killed.
It's just funny because it's not even the classic, like, I need to do what I gotta do, but, like, the bureaucracy won't let me. It's just, he doesn't need to do it. It's not even like they're gonna let the bad guy get away. They have a whole, they rant at the beginning about how, like, you know, the red tape of, like, you know, these in the government won't let us do what we gotta do to stop terrorism. But that's not even what happens in the movie. They're all like, oh, yeah, we're going to take out the terrorists. And Skull's like, but I want to take out the terrorists better and first.
And then they do send in like a SEAL team at the end who gets one of the three guys, but Seagal gets the other two.
Yeah. You know how often the stated themes or like the apparent theme and then the actual, like, you know, textual theme of the movie conflict. This one is just exclusively that amped up. Also just the actions of the characters conflict with like the actions of the characters, the themes conflict with the themes, their goals conflict with their goals. Like, everyone is pitting themselves against themselves.
Yeah.
That's a much better synopsis, Aaron. I'm glad you were paying more attention than I was, because I was just not into it.
The only reason I could do that is because I was transfixed.
Transfixed?
In the worst way possible.
See, I had completely the exact opposite reaction. I watched this movie. There was precisely one line, one scene that I wanted to talk about, and I was so bored. I had absolutely zero thoughts on the rest of the movie. Like, I do not care to talk about this movie. I have no thoughts on, like, how long is this movie? An hour, 30 minutes? I have no thoughts on, like, an hour and 29 minutes of the runtime of this movie. There is one thing I want to talk about, and I have nothing else to talk about because the rest of this movie was so dull.
Okay.
So I'm glad you were transfixed, at least.
Let's hear it.
For me, the part that sticks out is, we've talked before about how especially the Keanu Waxman, he's so plugged in, but these like Seagal movies, it is not a one way, it is a dialogue. There is call and response. We say this is bad, and the movie calls out, like, not like, hey, this is bad and we're gonna fix it, but like, hey, we hear you saying that this is bad. We're actually making it worse. And this movie, it's getting more and more synced. Rather than, like, we've talked about how the movies listen to us, we talk about something in one of our podcast episodes, and then, like, the next movie, like, it almost feels like it's responding to us.
Yeah.
This one was, like, hearing my thoughts. Because you're watching this movie, and you're 25 minutes in, and you're just like, wow, this movie is just, like, inventing new ways to be racist. You're just like, of course, it's 2016, so Steven Seagal has to, like... it's like his enemy is like Islamic terrorists, but at the Mexican border, and even like his allies who are the Native Americans, he finds like really weird ways to talk about them that are uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
my brothers, my Native American brothers picked you up at the border, and you're just like so gross, and you're like, oh, this movie is like racist in ways I can't even understand fully.
Oh, no, no, don't worry. They have a conversation later on their private jet about how they're not racist at all.
That's the part. That's the part. That's where I'm coming. That is what has bewitched me. When they're having a conversation, and then they're having a conversation stops. So they can look into the camera and give like the Ubisoft "we are a multicultural, like we're not being racist" like monologue. When Seagal literally looks into the camera and says, "We don't give a fuck about anybody's fucking religion. We don't care about what their ethnicity is. We don't care. We let everybody do what they want. It's like the great Chinggis Khan once said: practice your own religion, but pay tax to me." It's like a monkey trying to fuck a football. Now, really, this whole thing—it's just a fucking mess. Anyway. And then he keeps talking. The fact that he literally just does this, and then, anyway, like, I'm not making that part up. For some reason, that anyway is the weirdest part there. But, like, I'm sitting there. It's like, the woman brings it up. She's the first one, the female character. She says, like, hers isn't quite as weird as whatever that was that Seagal just said. Hers is like, oh, you know, it's not really, like, people who are strongly devout to their religion, they're not, really creating the trouble. Like, you can believe your religion, that's fine. It's just... bad people are going to do bad things. And then Seagal says this, which is weird. And because it's weird, because I'm not joking. He is looking in. He is not diegetically in character having a conversation. He is looking to the camera.
Into the camera.
And he is saying, hey, I know you're sitting at home thinking this movie is really racist, but I promise you, he's like just doing the, I don't care if you're black, white, blue, purple, whatever, like speech somebody says right before they just say some insanely racist thing. he is just like, we don't care, we're not racist, we just want to stop the practice your own religion but pay tax to me, which is him meaning I'm gonna come and shoot you with a gun. But then he says, I don't even know if this made sense in his head when he said it. I don't know if this was in the script or if this was one of his classic improvisations.
Has to be.
It's like a monkey trying to fuck a football. Now, really, this whole thing, it's just a fucking mess. Anyway. And then that is the last mention of, hey guys, don't worry, we're not racist. The rest of the movie is like, we need to stop these terrorists, you know, like
it's deeply uncomfortable.
It's a bad time.
I can't even think about anything that happened in the 25 minutes before or like the hour and 4 minutes after this, because I'm just watching this movie like it is just so boring and just the most boring. It is bad in the most boring ways possible. And then this happened and completely took me out when the character literally looks at me and it's like, hey, I know you think we're racist, but like, we're not racist. Here's a, I don't remember what episode.
Here's
it
a really uncomfortable speech to prove it.
Yeah,
anyway, back to being racist.
But also, I don't even know what episode this was. I think like at one point I made some joke that Seagal says some like insane thing, like it's trying to f- a cheeseburger sideways. He literally, what is this? What is he saying? What is happening? And then he just goes, anyway, and then the movie picks up again, and then it goes back to the movie. That's like a weird intermission, fourth wall breaking intermission. So I don't even have thoughts to share. I just had a reaction to that, and I didn't really have a reaction to the rest of the movie. The rest of the movie was quite greasy, just slid right on over me.
I was just
Matrix dodging the rest of this movie, but that one that one shot me in the chest.
I think this movie is really relying on you, like, looking away during the dialogue scenes and just, like, turning your head back every now and again and hoping either someone's shooting a gun or, like, there's a boob on screen or something.
Like, they even had flashbacks. Like, when they would, when characters would realize something had happened, they would have a flashback to the moment that it actually happened.
Okay.
In black and white.
My favorite time that happens is whenever they're, like, when exactly like three plot points have happened in this movie and they have to do a flashback and show you those three things happening in the order they happened.
Yes.
When it's like, oh, there was the drone watching you and then like you were being followed in this car and then this happened and then like they have to flashback all of those. And I'm like, movie, those are the only three things I remember about you. Like, you don't have to literally replay the footage of those three things. Those are the only three things that have happened over the last hour.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
those flashbacks were not just completely unnecessary. You chose the only things my brain is able to latch onto to remind me of.
I have two things.
Okay, sure.
Two things. Well, first thing, very quickly, at the very beginning of the movie, Seagal is talking to his handler, the guy that like sets him on the mission, and he's telling him about how they seized all of these weapons and drugs and stuff from some drug bust. I don't remember exactly what it was. They went into a mansion and killed a bunch of gang members and then mm-hmm. stole all their stuff.
Yeah.
He says, and I checked, I swear I checked. I went back, listened to it again, turned on subtitles, read it out.
It's amazing. He says how many that times they seized that in these movies.
Yeah.
Well, one, the sound mixing in this was trash and I couldn't understand hardly anything he was saying. But
But that's because he was talking kind of like this really. Yeah, it was awful. Awful. Absolutely awful. But anyway. I went back. I double checked it, and he says they seized something, 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 $2 million and 150 tons of cocaine. 150 yes! tons.
Yes.
Tons.
Tons.
150 tons.
Yes.
Of cocaine.
That is an impossibly large amount. That is quite impractical.
I don't know a lot about cocaine, but I know that 150 tons. It's not something you usually stumble across.
You don't stumble across 150 tons of anything. Not to mention cocaine.
Tons.
If they said 150 pounds, I'd be like, okay, sure. My brain would. I'd be like, that's oh yeah, cocaine. Like just some amount. It doesn't matter.
Like 150 kilos. Like that.
Sure. Yeah.
That's almost 400 grams? Pounds. Yeah, sure. That's like 400 pounds.
You chose the only amount that your brain hears and goes, bullshit.
So there was
the fish was this big.
That set me off right at the very beginning, but then
I forgot about
so
that.
Oh on the God. Plane I don't remember if this was before or after your bit, Zach, when he literally looks into the camera and says, I'm not racist. Anyway, back to being racist. he says to the girl, to his partner, and I quote, I wrote this out line for line. These are the exact words that this man says. She asks him something about the intel that they got about the meeting between the cartel and the terrorist group. And he says, and I quote, I mean, I never really believe intel. You believe intel? We used to say, and that's the key to death, you know? You can never trust intel. And that's what they say.
What?
And then 2 minutes later, he says, well, intel has really shown us unequivocally and absolutely that Rivera is joining forces with like Islamic fundamentalists. And then 5 minutes after that, I shit you not. Anyway, my intel is telling me right now that Rivera is supposedly holding a summit, supposed to be a big meeting within the next 48 hours, and it's my job to stop that meeting from happening.
No, it's not your job to stop that meeting from happening. It is explicitly in the text of the film your job to let it happen.
I mean, that was standing. Like, he just makes this stuff up. I mean, I never really believe intel, but my intel tells me that this is going to happen, what? So we have to stop it from happening.
Except that he's been hired to make sure that it does happen.
I'm not even,
it's like,
I can't even get into
that. There's so many layers of why that's a bad line.
We talk so often about how the text of the film, like, directly disagrees with and contradicts the theme of the film. And it couldn't be more obvious in so many different ways in this movie. It's just so, like, we say this every time, but it's frustrating. It's so frustrating to watch. You can't sit back, even just knowing that these are terrible movies. Like, you can go into a bad movie and have a good time. I love sitting down and watching a bad movie and having a good time with friends. You
there
can't
may even
do
be
that
a whole
with these
podcast dedicated to that very notion.
Right? You can't do that with these because they're not. You can't like just sit back and get drunk and watch a bad movie with Seagal in it because they're frustrating. They make you angry. They like actively like. It's like they're ripping little bits and pieces out of your brain actively. Like, no, don't think about that. Oh, you found another contradiction? No, no, you're not allowed to have that. Don't even think about it. We're going to keep rolling.
I think a big part of that for me also was that, like, no one in this was having any amount of fun. Like,
No,
no, everyone here looks either bored or angry the entire movie.
Any emotion. This is one of those where usually we can say that, like, yeah, Seagal was awful and terrible and his usual Seagal-y self, but his supporting cast actually put in a lot of effort and they've had successful careers after this, blah, 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 blah. No one in this one cared. And honest to God, I don't blame them because the guy, I have to look up his name, the guy on his team.
Russell Long.
The drone operator. Yeah. He has a very successful career and probably didn't need this movie. So it didn't really matter that he wasn't having fun. This was probably
it was
just a paycheck. He was in Westworld. That's right. So he just has to get through it.
Yeah.
The girl, she didn't look like she was having any fun. And that's because she has a meaningless sex scene with fully clothed Seagal in this movie. Yeah. And I can only imagine how awful that was to deal with. So...
She also
don't blame her either.
As you touched on before, she has the fully clothed sex scene, like you just said. And also, like you said earlier, they meet up and it's like, you know, we go way back. You're CIA and DEA, me, I'm FBI, and we're an old flame. To give full context, I had to do the math on it. She was 27 when this movie came out.
Yeah.
Gross.
27 years old, and she is
an old flame. An old flame. Gross. Like, gross.
I don't know what this really says, but looking at the IMDb page, only 6 of the people on this cast list even have photographs in their IMDb profiles.
What Keanu Waxman movie is this? What number?
I think this is the last one of 2016.
The last one. Oh, okay. Oh, I think this is the last one of this year. Yes.
Of that year of 20, because there were a lot in 2016.
There were a bunch.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And then he did one more in 2017. Yeah. He did Cartels in 2017. So in addition to apparently working on 8 episodes of the True Justice Steven Seagal TV show. This is apparently his eighth Steven Seagal movie in 7 years.
Wow.
This man cannot care. It would be weird if he was putting any effort into this. It would be frankly frightening if he had a passion for this. Nobody involved in this movie should care about this movie.
I kind of alluded to this at the beginning of this episode. I think the script for this was actually like 3 or 4 different scripts. It was mostly like a cheap Ghost Protocol knockoff. But there's also there's one moment where Seagal is like leading his final attack on the compound where the drug dealer guy is.
Right.
And he tries to have the kitchen fight from The Raid. I don't know if you've ever seen The Raid.
I love the kitchen fight from The Raid.
Greatest martial arts films of all time. And he tries to have the very famous kitchen fight from The Raid. Except you probably never were the martial arts expert that you need to be to have that particular fight.
Absolutely not.
But they do that thing where they post up with their wrists against each other and then they do an exchange and then they stop and then they put their wrists together and then they have an exchange. Except it's just embarrassing.
And it only lasts a couple seconds.
Yeah.
It's and every single time, so there's all three of the main cast have different individual battles that they fight with different members of the cartel and the terrorist group. And every time it's Seagal's turn, the camera shakes violently.
Most of this movie is shot on a dolly or a crane.
Yeah. Until it's Seagal's turn, it's like someone was carrying it and they were intentionally bobbing up and down to give this some shakes so that it looked like he was moving more than he actually was.
I will say there are early in the movie a couple kind of pretty crane shots, just kind of competently made, at least at the beginning when there's slow motion and he's having a flashback to that time that he raided that drug compound, which never comes up again.
Right.
The slow-mo is shot, at least it's shot at 60 frames, so when they slow it back down to 24, it makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But And I think that's like another case of, I know there's some sort of like B crew that was doing the stuff that looks nice.
I mean, that's so, the funny thing about that is like, that's like bare minimum cinematography.
It's bare minimum. Like, oh, the camera settings were correct when they started filming.
Yeah, like you don't need the B crew to make that happen. As the A crew should be skilled enough to make that happen, and they're just pumping these out one after another after another, and they're just like, you know what? I just have to get this done so I can get paid and go home. Like, I can't be any more clear. Like, these people put in exactly the amount of effort that this film deserved.
Maybe,
and not
maybe
an ounce less.
More.
Maybe a little bit more, really. Everyone did just the perfect job for this movie, and they got paid for it, and that's what matters.
This movie is it gets exactly what it deserves, and it is exactly what we deserve.
Yeah.
For the sins we have committed. I mean,
of committing to this sin. Of a project.
I have a ton of notes here, and I could spend the next hour just like going over continuity errors, like weird little lines that don't make any sense, decisions that don't matter. But this movie doesn't matter enough for me to go over them.
No.
Like, there's a throwaway line about the terrorists they catch at the beginning of the movie. They were actually trying to get out of the U.S., not into it. Except, what does that mean?
And they play that up like it's a big twist. Like, oh, hey, wait a minute, we just learned this.
Except they show footage of that, and they're definitely trying to get into the U.S. anyway. the little command console that Seagal uses, his gadget briefcase, is definitely made of like old plywood, and it's not made well. It's like the keyboard that's in it doesn't fit in the divot that they made for the keyboard, so they just bent the keyboard. It's like arching because it didn't like it. The keyboard was too wide. It's like a crappy Logitech keyboard that was too wide for like the divot in the prop that they made, so they just like shoved it in there, and so you can see it's bowed up out of the console. I don't know, a lot of the props, all the gadgets look like garbage because they just got some guy on the props table. Hey, you have 10 minutes. We need a listening device that can see through walls.
So this movie has, like, we talked about the gadgets. This kind of has like a Mission Impossible like gadgety feel.
Yeah.
But I worry, even though we've said nothing but bad things about this very bad movie, I'm still worried that a potential listener, because media literacy is dead in this day and age, might walk away from this thinking, oh, this is kind of like Mission Impossible. This is like Mission Impossible. I should watch it. But so in Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol, where they say we're in, like, you know, we need a spy on this other room in this building that we're in. So we're going to have Ethan Hunt put on like these gloves that can like seal themselves on, and he can climb himself up into a building. And then you literally have like Tom Cruise climbing the Burj Khalifa. This movie is a guy with a drone is flying a drone outside of the window they're spying on. And the people inside the window are like, hey, we see the drone spying on us. It's like 20 feet away from the
because
window.
Because it's the biggest, loudest, most obvious drone.
Like, when we say this is Mission Impossible, it's like, hey, this guy has like a $20 Walmart drone. And it'll literally show you the controller he's using has a screen on it, and then it'll cut to like a first person view of the drone, and those look different. Like, those don't even look the same. And the people are like, hey, this is a very obvious drone filming us. What's up with that? And the one guy who has who should also just be like, yeah, I don't know why this drone is spying on us, is like, don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it. This, like, hotel is really advanced. They have good security. That's what he says.
Our main characters incompetently, like, intentionally do things badly to find themselves into achieving their mission of sowing distrust, but that only works because the people they're sowing distrust in are also as equally as incompetent. Yeah. So when we talk about, like, the gadgets, we're talking about, like, this briefcase with just, like, a bent keyboard crammed in there. We're talking about, like, a dude's drone. We are not talking about, like, the face replicator where they have to like invent new camera movements and like in scene transitions to like make the effects of that work so seamlessly. We're talking about like a guy is flying a drone and the people he's spying on go, hey, look at that drone. That is how Mission Impossible goes
also,
protocol.
You can kind of tell the drone's a rental. They're very careful with this thing.
They're very careful with it.
They don't do like any fancy tricks or nothing. The fastest it ever goes is like a light jog.
Well, they show every time they break out the drone, they show it landing, and they show it landing very slowly and carefully, and like the guy packs it up and puts it away, like it's very intentional.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So you know how like this movie is like Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol, but like you know that one scene when they like mess up and they have to kick like Lea Seydoux's character like out of the window.
Yeah.
It's just that for like an hour and a half.
Just bad. It's really bad. Really, really bad and frustrating and bad.
We had favorite lines.
I mean, I do.
Mine was the one where he talks about where he doesn't actually make any sense while talking about how he doesn't trust the intel that he's given. Oh, and then directly afterwards says that he trusts the intel he was given.
Good. Brilliant.
I mean, mine is obviously it's like a monkey trying to f*** a football now. Really, this whole thing is just a mess. Anyway.
What?
Anyway.
Anyway. Like, he's just straight up just saying, back to the movie.
Back to the movie.
Well, my favorite line, the end of the movie, where Seagal's giving his, like, voiceover recap on, like, what was supposed to have been the conclusion of this movie. He says, the paradigm is changed, not shifted.
What? I mean...
What? 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 What do you think a shift is?
Paradigm shift is like a very well known term.
The paradigm is changed, not shifted.
Not shifted.
Like, so he heard paradigm shift for the first time. Is like, nah, I'm gonna use that.
No. Yeah, that's gotta be half of his lines.
I'm gonna twist it because I'm not just.
I'm gonna be clever with it.
I'm gonna change.
Yeah,
not shifting the paradigm. We're changing it. No one said Steven. That's not.
It's not how
we're
that
changing
works.
The paradigm and we're shifting the game. Now, okay, can either of you tell me why is this movie called Contract to Kill?
Because he got a contract. Actually, well,
by
I mean,
the actually,
so
CIA. Actually,
at the beginning of the movie, the guy who meets him—he's
very much not contracted to kill.
Well, at the beginning of the movie,
oh, actually, yeah, you're right.
He like the guy who meets him at CD Bar, not the CD Bar. That's not a descriptor. The name of the bar is CD Bar.
Mm-hmm.
Like he alludes to Seagal's violent past and says like, "Oh, you're the best wet work we've got. You can do all the good killing stuff. I'm gonna hire you for a job that specifically you're not supposed to kill anyone.
All the good killing.
Like you're very very good at killing people. I'm gonna hire you for a job in which we really don't want you to do that actually.
Yeah, but is he really? It's not really even a contract either because he's
it's supposed to be like off the books.
He's an asset, or he's a
cold asset, or whatever they called him.
Cold asset. He's being reactivated. It's not. Yeah. There's no contract. Like he works for them, and they're pulling him to do a job. Like he's supposed to just be undercover, or whatever, and then they're activating him to do a job.
Yeah.
Well, maybe it's because he's like an independent contractor. Like you know, he doesn't get a W-2. He's not an actual employee. He like has to like file like you
he
know.
He has to pay for his own health insurance and
like you know taxes and everything. And so it's like independent contractor to kill.
Maybe.
How many movies have there been about that? There was that one movie, The Accountant. I think that he was an assassin or something. How much accounting did he do in that? I think that might be an
actually
film.
He a was, fair amount.
Yeah? A fair
did
amount.
You see the, I have not like, seen have you the, accountant? The Accountant. He actually spends most of that movie doing accounting, and
he's,
I'm not even lying.
Yeah, he's a he prepares taxes for people.
Uh-huh.
Like, really... He straight up he also like shoots people with a gun, but he does a good decent amount of account. That title doesn't lie. That title
okay, I need
accurate.
To see that movie then.
It's a good movie.
It's okay.
Yeah, it's
well,
okay.
Okay, but I'm gonna
it's
go.
An okay
you know, you
movie.
Should watch instead of Contract Killer. You should watch The Accountant. Okay, I stole that. Because one of you is gonna say Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol.
Oh, I'm gonna go ahead and claim that right away.
You should watch The Raid, the other movie that I brought up.
Oh yeah,
there you go.
One, yeah. Or if you're feeling
spicy, right there.
Actually, yeah, you should
the
watch
Raid The Raid 2.
Or, you know, you should watch Mission Impossible Rogue Nation. You should watch Mission Impossible watch 1, 2, 3, Mission Impossible Fallout.
Which, watch The Raid 2 without watching The Raid first.
Yeah, you can do that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fine.
That's okay.
That's it. I'm done talking about this movie.
No cold outro. No post theme song.
No, that's it. No, the post theme song is going to be us talking about Dune because I need to talk about Dune.
No, we can't talk about because the Chronicles of Narnia.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I
the sister podcast.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. You're right. You're right. You're right. You're right.
I feel like someone should say something funny at the end here.
No.
That means one of us has to die.
Wait, did we didn't say what... You're still recording,
I'm
right?
I'm still recording.
Yeah. Yeah.
We didn't say our star ratings.
Oh.
Oh, man.
So hard.
It is really difficult because I've given so many of these half a star. And I think this one deserves that on a normal scale. But because mine is so curved, I think I'm going to have to give this one star just because it's not as bad as some of the other garbage. But it's still pretty bad. That makes sense.
Yeah.
This is maybe the most one star Steven Seagal movie for me so far. Yeah. Like, it is intractably could not be anything else other than one star. Yeah. In every single universe, in every single lifetime, this movie is one star.
Yeah, I think I have to give it one star. There's nothing... I mean, there's lots that points it out as bad. But there's, like...
Clearly.
I don't know. There's nothing here that would really bump it down to being as bad as some of the other stuff we've seen, just like on a technical level.
Yeah. It's one star. It's bad. It's not good.
Yeah.
That's a...
Don't watch it.
2 out of 10. That's a 20 out of 100.
Not worth your time. Don't watch it.
20 out of 100.
Like it, but it's so funny when the conversation that we're having is like, it's one star and like, yeah, because... I guess there's nothing we can point to make it any lower than that. So we'll be nice and give it a star out of 5 stars. Like, just the way we talk about these, the way we under the scale, the frame of reference.
I can't. Like, I watched Wonka. What was that? Tuesday night? Last night? It was great. Yeah. I had a great time. I gave it 4 stars. I really wanted to give it 5 stars, but I had to hold myself back because like that wasn't, it was really good.
Because you're saving.
Yeah.
Because later this, like within the next like week and a half, you're going to be giving 5 stars to a different Timothée Chalamet movie.
It'll be a little later than that, but yeah.
You're going to be given like 7 out of 5 stars.
Yeah, to a different Timothée Chalamet movie.
Yeah. This podcast isn't going to release until after Dune Part 2 has come out. Can you imagine whenever people are listening to this, we will live in a world where Dune Part 2 has been released. Whoa. And we are blessed with being able to watch Dune Part 2, which we are not currently in that world.
Yeah.
And this world sucks and I hate it
because
there's no Dune Part 2 in it yet.
Oh, but can you imagine what Dune Part 3 will be like when they do Messiah?
I'm not ready for Dune Messiah, Hans. You gotta have Dune and Dune Messiah read
before the
Dune Messiah movie comes out.
I have an enormous amount of time. To make that happen, I think we'll be fine.
Yeah, it's only going to be like 5 years before.
Well, they have to wait for Paul Muad'Dib to age up a little bit.
They're going to wait like 12 years, like, you know, real time, like age. Well, but the problem is, like, hold on.
Are there any actors out there who look like an old Timothée Chalamet?
I don't think so.
Well, the only problem is also it takes place 12 years after Dune, but it's 12 years where he lives on a planet that is entirely desert, so really you need to wait like 24 years because you know this dude is like
he's been living alone out in the middle of the most inhospitable desert in the galaxy.
Hey, spoilers.